Hey, it's Jamie Scrimger. When I became a stepmom, I quickly realized that while moms are encouraged to keep it real, there's a big double standard when it comes to stepmoms. So I decided to start the conversation myself. Thriving as a stepmom doesn't just come from conversations about being a stepmom, though. Here, we dive into marriage, relationships, personal growth, and more. My mission? Inspire you to live a kick-ass life while bringing you along as I create my own. This is the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. We have Amber Trejo, family and trauma therapist, on the podcast today. I found Amber on Instagram and I messaged her immediately. I was like, I need to talk to you. I need to get you on the show. And I think we're supposed to be really good friends, to be quite honest. Anyway, in this episode, we really dive into, well, all the stuff that I love talking about, you know, regulating your nervous system, attachment styles, childhood trauma, all of that stuff. But in all seriousness, we dive into how understanding your attachment style and your childhood stuff can improve relationships as an adult, what may be going on when stepmoms feel like outsiders, what it means to have a dysregulated nervous system, and strategies you can use to get regulated again. Like, you know that feeling you have when you can't get ahead, or you feel like you're always in a rush, like you're constantly triggered, constantly in this flight or fight mode? Yeah, let's work on that. That's what we're going to talk about today. And I've been there and I find myself there often. And this shouldn't be our baseline. This is such a good conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. If you're not already, be sure to go follow Amber over on Instagram. Let's dive in. Amber, welcome to the podcast. You know, I'm so excited for this conversation. I saw you out on Instagram and I was like, I need to talk to this girl.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here. I've been really looking forward to it.
Amazing. All right. So I think the best place to start is, you know, I feel like the best female driven businesses or services, we kind of like end up teaching what we need. Like, we see a need in the world from our past and our experience, and we, you know, do the work and then we're like sharing about it. And I would love to hear how you started, what you're doing right now, and a little bit about your story.
Yes. It's so funny because as you were saying that, this quote that I just heard the other day came up for me, and it's by Suzanne Cain. She's an author. And she said, the pain you can't get rid of, that's your offering. And so that just really feels like it connects so much. When I heard that, it just, you know, really took me back because it was like, yes, yes, that is such a big part of why I do what I do. And just even looking at your platform and everything that you do around the stepmom community and everything, I'm sure that resonates with you as well. Mm-hmm. You know, just our own struggles, how we heal from those moving forward. Sometimes our greatest calling is just helping other people who are going through similar things.
Yeah.
And so I grew up with a lot of traumatic things that happened to me in my childhood. I don't know if you've ever heard of the adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about? The like scale of 1 to 10.
I'm too scared. I don't want to know my number.
Oh my gosh. I know, you know, we did it in grad school and I found out my number and then I like put my paper down and was just like, oh my gosh. And then my teacher said, okay, now we're going to turn around to our, like the person sitting next to us and we're going to share a score with them. And my heart just dropped. I was like, oh no, you know, I don't want to share this with anybody. But so basically it's just adverse childhood experiences that happen throughout the course of your childhood. And there's 10 things and I scored 7 out of 10. So without going into a bunch of detail, my father left when I was younger and there was a lot of betrayal trauma around him leaving and it was really sudden. And then after he left, my mom, you know, really struggled with addiction and she struggled with alcoholism and she became really emotionally and verbally and physically abusive when she'd be drinking. She was married a few different times. And so we had a lot of stepdads and 3 of them ended up passing away just from natural causes. So there was just a lot of repeated abandonment wounds and attachment injuries. I say this as I'm smiling from ear to ear because I'm just a little dysregulated as I talk about it still. It's still a little bit hard. And so as I was coming out of my childhood in high school, I just really started using substances and alcohol to really drown my pain. I felt like I barely graduated high school. As I was about to get out, I barely got out and went to try college and just felt like I just kept failing. I kept searching for substances, had like so many jobs, quit them all right after I would start. I used to have my best friend call up and quit for me because I didn't want to quit myself. So she would just like call up and quit for me and couldn't keep a job, couldn't have a healthy relationship. And once again, I didn't know everything that I had been through. I didn't know about ACEs. I didn't know that it was trauma. I didn't know about complex trauma, about how you go through trauma after trauma after trauma and the stuff that it does to your nervous system and the stuff that it does to your body. I just felt like a massive failure in life. I just felt like I can't get it together. I don't know why. There's something wrong with me. So then I ended up moving from my childhood home in with my cousin. And she was a Christian and she had had similar circumstances to me growing up. And so I moved in with her and her family was just, you know, really the first healthy family system I had kind of been a part of. Her and her husband, they were having kids and they were, you know, having family dinners and they weren't having crazy fights where people were beating each other or screaming at each other. So I really healed a lot in that place. I really understood a little bit more about, okay, this is what a healthy home looks like. And I started to realize the extent of like how toxic a lot of the stuff that I grew up around was. Mm-hmm. And so during that time, I healed a lot and ended up meeting my husband over there and went back to school a little bit, but still couldn't like hold it together. Got married. And then once I got married, I had done a lot of spiritual bypassing during that time. So I had always been a Christian, but I really went into like all in, like I am in these Bible studies and I'm doing the Beth Moore stuff and everything like that. So I was really like, I'm healed. I'm good, you know? And I met my husband, finally was able to have a healthy attachment somewhat to him. He was a very healthy, the first healthy person that I had dated. Treated me really well and was just super kind and gentle and fell in love with him, got married. And then once I got married, a lot of my attachment stuff really started coming back out. And it was like, I don't get what's going on. Like, I'm good. I'm healed. You know, God has healed me and I'm great. And this attachment stuff was still coming up. And I just felt this dread inside my body that he's going to leave. He's going to betray me. He is going to screw me over. And so just had a lot of issues in my marriage, a lot of toxic things that were coming back up for me. I realized that I was somewhat verbally abusive at times to my husband and, you know, always kept him at arm's length. And so then I had my first child and I had a massive panic attack over being a mom and, you know, had the worst postpartum anxiety and like called my cousin in a meltdown and just was like, I can't do this. Like, I'm not cut out to do this. I can't be a mom. I don't have the patience. I don't have, you know, the ability to keep myself calm when this baby needs me and is crying. And so motherhood really like brought up a lot more of those attachment issues as well. And a lot of my CPTSD, my complex post-traumatic stress disorder, was coming out just because I noticed all of these things coming up inside of me that I just couldn't control. I couldn't talk my way out of. And so that's when I went back to school. And I started studying psychology and I started learning about all of these things or a lot of these things about my family of origin and just how all of those things that happened to me really deeply impacted me in so many ways. And I just loved studying and going to school when I was a mom as well, you know, and it just helps me learn so much about my relationship. And so just kind of kept going and ended up becoming a therapist, going to grad school and doing a ton of work throughout that because I didn't expect them to make us process through so much of our own trauma. So then like after getting my bachelor's in psychology, moving on to grad school, it was like I was a marriage and family therapist. And so we go through all these family of origin things. And I just realized how so many of these patterns were just really built into me throughout my childhood, and then all of the trauma that happened to me, how all of those fears still existed because, of course, you know, like they don't go anywhere. It takes time to heal those. So that felt so reassuring that there was nothing actually wrong with me, that I was going through trauma responses, trying to protect myself. So yeah, I became really passionate about it and decided I really wanted to help other parents, especially who have survived trauma and who are coming out of it and realizing that they're starting from scratch with parenting their own children. And I just have so much compassion for that. So that's really where I started to shift my focus, was like, I'm going to really focus on parents who have been through a lot of these ACEs, have struggled with CPTSD or complex trauma, and how to help them learn how to be different from the way that they were raised.
I have a question for you. Are you on the Element train yet? Element is my go-to electrolyte drink mix. I swear by it. And I have been drinking it daily for, I would say, a couple years now. Staying hydrated is a crucial and huge priority of mine. And proper hydration isn't just about drinking water. It means having adequate water and electrolytes. Element tastes great. It has no BS ingredients, no sugar, no artificial coloring, and you feel good when you drink it. Formulated to help anyone with their electrolyte needs, from professional athletes to everyday mom, even if you're following like a keto or a low carb or paleo diet, it is so good. And it is also approved by the Metabolic Reset Program that I have been doing as well. Element is just, it's good. It's always approved. A growing body of research reveals that optimal health outcomes occur at sodium levels that are actually 2.3 times the government recommendation. That's why Element is saying more salt and not less. Each stick of Element has 100 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium. My favorite flavors are raspberry and watermelon. And when you purchase Element using my code, you will get a free sample pack with all the flavors so you can decide which one is your fave. Head to www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom to get a free sample pack with purchase. That's www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom to get a free sample pack with purchase. I have Element before workouts, after maybe a little bit too much wine, when I'm traveling, and midday when I'm not really ready for dinner yet, but I need a little something. Head to www.drinkelement.com/kickassstepmom, my go-to electrolyte drink. I never understood the difference or the value in investing in good sheets for your bed until I started sleeping in Cozy Earth's bamboo sheets. They are literally unreal. It is such a different experience. And for the last several months, I have had this urge to freshen up our bedroom with new sheets and a more clean vibe and just a fresh vibe. And I've been looking for the perfect quilt to go at the end of our bed. And Cozy Earth pulled through again. I finally found the perfect one. So I got a new crisp white duvet cover, new sheets, and a quilt, and it really is looking good. Guys, you can feel the difference with their best-selling bamboo sheets made from 100% premium viscose from bamboo. They are temperature regulating, which is key, because if you know, you know. They are so freaking soft and have this oversized fit and a gentle drape, which I appreciate because it drives me wild when sheets or duvet covers aren't big enough for the bed. Like, you can see the sides peeking out. I seriously hate that. So these sheets go right to the bottom. They're very deep. It just looks so good. And they get softer with every wash. For the quilt, I ended up getting the linen box quilt. I got the natural color. You know I love my neutrals. And it is woven from the finest blend of bamboo viscose and French flax linen. The quilt's texture and breathability, it's so soft and it is perfect for year round, which I love because I like to keep things simple and I don't want to be switching out my sheets or switching out my bedding for winter or spring or summer. I just want to have it work all year round. So guys, it is looking good. It is so beautiful. Cozy Earth has been a long-term sponsor of the podcast and I have been sleeping in their sheets. I have been wearing their PJs and their loungewear for years. They are so comfortable and it's no wonder they have been on Oprah's Favorite Things year after year. And I'm pretty sure that I just saw Kim Kardashian wearing their PJs on Instagram. I've had listeners reach out and tell me that they got themselves some Cozy Earth after listening to the podcast. and they too are obsessed. So Cozy Earth generously gives listeners of the Kick-Ass Stepmom podcast 40% off your order. So all you have to do is use the code COZYJAMIE40 at checkout and get 40%, which is crazy. Such a great discount. So head to www.cozyearth.com, use the code COZYJAMIE40 for 40% off.
I resonate with the story so much. A couple of things that you said, I was just like, oh my gosh, yes. First, when you're saying, like, you're telling about your traumas and you're smiling, my sisters and I just, you know, we had lots of stuff as kids. And so we'll start telling stories and our husbands will be there and we'll be laughing. And it is not funny, like what we're saying, but even like, see, I'm laughing right now. Like it is kind of, it had to be funny for us to survive. And it has to be funny for us to recall it and to move through it. And, you know, my one sister's husband is like, I cannot stand when you guys are talking like this and you're laughing and you think this is funny and okay. I'm like, no, we do not think this is okay in any way, shape, or form. But it really does become this, almost this defense mechanism where you can't even really talk about it without kind of smiling a little bit because you're just like, I don't even really know how to explain it. So that really hit for me when you said that. And then the other piece is like, you think you're healed and you think you're fine. And then you get married and you have kids or you're in a healthy relationship. And it's like, I don't know about you, but it almost felt too good. Like when things would be too good, you'd be like, ah, yeah, like this is too good to be true. Like this is not going to stay like this. And you almost have to kind of like sabotage it, right? Like with your own reactions, because it doesn't feel safe for things to be so calm and for things to be so good.
Absolutely. And I think it's a way that we protect ourselves. Like you're going to leave. So you might as well just do it. And I'm going to show you why you're going to leave. And it ends up becoming this self-fulfilling prophecy, mm-hmm. you know, which is why when we have an insecure attachment style, it is so challenging to get out of those patterns that we take with us, right? We always end up finding ourselves in similar relationships, or trauma reenactment is a big thing. We end up finding people and being connected to people that are similar to our primary caregivers. And so when we find that healthy, loving relationship, that too good to be true part, oh, that hits so close to home. You're so right. Like there's no fear. Like once you have something that you truly genuinely love, like this could be taken away from me. So it's almost like I'd rather not have it because mm-hmm. I know how to live in the space of the unhappy and the unsafe and the unhealthy and do it on my own and hyper independence, right? Like that's a big thing for people who've been through trauma. But to truly let myself love someone and let myself know that it could end and I could get hurt, that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. And to let go of that control, like control's always been a big thing for me, letting go of control and just having faith that I'll be okay no matter what, or if I don't have control over everything here, things will still be okay. That still means he loves me. Like all of these things show up, but I can literally remember driving in my car and be like, well, things are too good right now. Shit's going to hit the fan. And then it was almost like, I would go have a reaction to something that was not rational, or I would almost like look for something to be pissed about just because I needed to have that dysregulation to feel safe.
Absolutely.
And you're just kind of like screwing yourself over, right? It's like this constant cycle, and it's hard to get out of, but I think it's so powerful. And I talk to stepmoms a lot about this in my community, is understanding what's happened in our childhood and like diving into those childhood wounds and your attachment styles and all of that so that you can understand your triggers, like what is actually going on for you in these moments. You know, it's often not about the dishes. It's often not about your husband not calling. It's not about, you know, feeling like an outsider because they're watching a movie and you feel there's some deep rooted something underneath of that, which is making this situation feel the way it's feeling for you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And it's life changing. I feel like when I recognized, oh, this is coming from this place. And a lot of people sometimes struggle with that because they think that trauma survivors are using it as an excuse. And it's so different from using it as an excuse. Mm-hmm. You're still taking responsibility for your behaviors, but understanding that those behaviors make sense from a nervous system perspective, according to what you have gone through. And you had mentioned self-sabotage. It's true, we do sabotage certain things, but it's usually to protect ourselves. And so it's more self-protection that we do these things. And once we can understand what part of us is scared and what part of us is being triggered and why, it changes the whole game.
Mm-hmm. No, it's wild. Even a big thing for me when Darren and I first got together. So I wanted everything to be perfect, like perfectly organized house. Everything was neat and tidy. I wanted the kids dressed a certain way because I, similar to you, like I had a lot of issues growing up. You know, there was a pretty good chance I was going to be in juvenile detention at one point. Like if I'm being totally honest, like I was aggressive and I was making bad decisions and I was just like constantly feeling like I was never going to be good. Right. And so I feel like when I became an adult, my whole thing was when I got together with Darren, it was like, I'm going to prove to everyone that I'm going to be a good stepmom. I do know what I'm getting myself into. By the way, I did not, but I'm going to do this, right? Like I'm going to be amazing at it. And in doing that, I try to control everything so I could control the image that I have, right? And so you almost have to like see what's going on for you. So when I'm, you know, stressed out about like shoes or a mess or like age appropriate things with the kids, and I'm having this like big reaction, actually not about the shoes. It's not about the mess. It's about this unhealed wound in me or this story I've been telling myself that I'm going to be a screw up. I have to prove myself. If I don't have things perfect, it'll prove everyone wrong. Like, you know, those narratives that we have in our head. And it's so powerful when you can finally be like, oh, wait, like that's what's going on here. I really need to like go back and do that work. And that's the whole point about like the personal growth, right? You have to do that work in order to truly thrive as an adult, because I think, you know, whether we have huge trauma or not, or multiple traumas or not, I think we all just have stuff from our childhood that shows up in the way that we're parenting or step parenting or in our relationships. It's just like, we're bringing that suitcase with us.
Absolutely. And that is such a good point, because I think a lot of people that I work with are like, oh, I don't have childhood trauma. No, nothing horrible happened to me. You know, I grew up with two parents in the household. So just to name that, we all have wounds from our childhood. I think that's so monumental, and that there's always work we can do around those wounds. Mm-hmm. And not acknowledging them does not make them go away. All it does is keep us stuck in these habitual patterns that we don't understand, and just kind of like going through the motions. Mm-hmm. And there was something else that you said that really hit home for me. Oh yeah. About the being a delinquent and then like going into after you got married, like the image part. That is me to a T, yeah. Girl.
I know. I feel like we are like best friends. We just haven't met yet.
I know. I told my husband, I was like, I don't know what she's been through, but like, I know she resonates with my posts. And so I'm feeling like we're going to get along really well. And I just love your stuff too, by the way. But yeah, that hits so close to home, because it was like a dysregulated nervous system. Okay. So going into the nervous system, fight or flight, I was doing whatever. I was like pulling for substances. I was going out and being aggressive. I was screwing up all my relationships, and my nervous system was still dysregulated, but it just changed into perfectionism. And it was like, I have to go to school. I can't just be a parent. I have to get straight A's and, you know, get my degree. And then I'm going to go to grad school and I'm going to finish my program. And everybody has to think that I have this perfect family and this perfect image. And that showed up as dysregulation in my parenting a lot, because when my kids weren't acting right, I totally felt that shame of, it's because, you know, you don't know what you're doing. And how could you know what you're doing? And that self-hatred really like sunk in, and I would just get so dysregulated with my children if mm-hmm. I was embarrassed, like if I felt like they were embarrassing me, because I felt like their behaviors were a portrayal of me, and that just wasn't the case at all. You know, they were just kids. And so recognizing that is so huge.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And, you know, even learning how to regulate your nervous system and regulate your reactions when you weren't taught that. You know, I grew up like, if you were in trouble, your parents are just losing their shit on you, right? Like if I was in trouble, like I was getting yelled at. Like there were no calm conversations about consequences and feelings and anything like that. And that's no shame on my parents. I think it was just kind of the time. I think it was their own childhood wounds creeping up. Like there was just like all of this stuff going on. So it was just like, you were in shit. You were being like screamed at. And learning how to parent my daughter and my stepkids without losing my shit, that was a big challenge, right? Because I always knew I didn't want to be that. But also like learning how not to be that and like doing that work on yourself. I saw this meme once. It was like, you're reparenting yourself while parenting your kids. It's a very challenging thing to do.
Oh my gosh, yes. That resonates with me too. Like my mom, I love her so much, but she had so much rage. And oh my gosh, if you did something, like she would lose her shit all the time. And it wasn't just like lose your shit, like screaming, which was horrible as well, but it was like lose your shit, like you're gonna get beat, you know what I mean? And so I always said, I'll never do that, I'll never be like you, you know? And then you become a parent and the things that you swear you'll never do just start creeping up inside of you. And I recognized a lot, like I had a lot of rage and I never felt like I had rage as much prior to having kids. But when there's so much going on and your nervous system is so overloaded and your sensory overload, you know, and they're screaming and crying and you're sleep deprived and you don't know how to heal yourself and you're in an emotional flashback, you know, from traumatic things that you've went through where there was chaos and someone was screaming and wouldn't stop and you couldn't control it. That just comes up sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it really is like a learning to soothe yourself, you know? And I think that that is one thing that a lot of parenting coaches that I see don't teach enough of is, we could sit here and go through all the ways that saying good job is going to screw your kid up. And we could go through all the ways of, you know, if sending them to their room is going to screw them up. And what parents really need to know, especially that have come from chaotic backgrounds where there was a lot of, you know, screaming and yelling and all of that, is how to soothe themselves. And focusing on all these little minute details is not always helpful. It just dysregulates our nervous system more. And so I think that if I could go back to my parenting journey, what I really would have focused on, because all of those things were helpful for me to know as a mom, you know, like how to discipline and how to do this and how to do that. But if I couldn't soothe myself and if I burned myself out because I was trying to be perfect, my rage would definitely come out and I would have one of those moments of like, I can't believe I just did that. And so I wish I would have known.
Oh yeah. And that's the worst feeling.
Oh my gosh. The shame that comes after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say, I think I went the opposite way. Like I went too far. So I was like, I'm not going to yell. I'm not going to make them feel how I felt. And so after I started to really do the work and kind of figured out what was going on for me, I don't yell at all anymore. Like not very often, more now that my daughter is getting a bit older, but I never would raise my voice. I would never be stern like about things. I would let Darren be the heavy, especially with my stepkids. And I realized I went almost too far, like no routine, like, you know, trying to make sure they were feeling happy and all the things all the time. Right. And just like, didn't want her, like when I go to get my daughter in trouble, I'm like, I don't want her feelings to be hurt or like things like that. When I know there's part of like the disciplining that is like part of parenting. So it's interesting too, right? You can go so far the other way. We're like, I'm not going to be like that, where it almost becomes damaging on that side too.
Yes. That is such a good point. Cause I meet a lot of trauma survivors that are like that, that they go the opposite way where, and I feel like I was always kind of like had one foot on each side of the fence with that, like, which is why, so I call it the rage or disengage cycle. So it's almost like in order to manage my own emotions, I have to like disengage from my children or like not implement, like give into their temper tantrum. Because if I don't, then I don't know that I can handle myself. So then I will give in, you know what I mean? So that was kind of what would happen to me.
Literally, that's me.
Yes, that makes so much
literally
sense.
That's me. Rage or disengage.
Yeah.
If you were looking at me right now, you would think that I have a sex toy in my hands, but I don't. And while sex is also a great way to help relieve stress and manage anxiety, I'm not holding a sex toy. I'm holding Moonbird. Moonbird is a handheld breathing device designed to comfortably fit in the palm of your hand, and it's like your own personal breathing coach. So in my episode with Ashley Neese on burnout and the power of breath a few weeks back, I talked about how much intentional breathing has helped me feel more grounded and manage my anxiety. Moonbird has been a huge support in this. Right now, while you're listening to this, I want you to stop and just do some breathing. So take a deep breath in for 5 seconds. Out for 5 seconds. And do that like 5 or 6 times, even 10 times. We don't breathe enough. We don't really tap into the power of breath and how calming and grounding it can be. So Moonbird is the world's first handheld device for guided breathing exercises. So there's no need to look at an app. There's no need to count on your own. You just have to breathe. So you hold in your hands and the vibrations in this device guide your breathing. So this helps support people with insomnia or poor sleep and stress and anxiety, ADHD, autism, and burnout. So when you shake the device, it will start inflating and then deflating. So in your hand, it'll feel like you're holding this little bird that's breathing in and out. And the only thing that you need to do is breathe along with the Moonbird. So when it inflates, you breathe in. When it deflates, you breathe out. It's really simple, it's intuitive, and it takes all of the effort and thinking out of your breathing exercises. I find it so calming, and I have been trying to be more intentional with my breathing and regulating my nervous system this year, and Moonbird has been such a support. So you can use it for an afternoon breathwork session in the morning before you start your day or before your meditation or when you're in bed and trying to unwind and fall asleep. You can use it basically anytime you need to stop and really focus on your breath. So to check it out, head to www.moonbird.life and use the code KICKASSSTEPMOM to get $20 off your device. That's www.moonbird.life and use the code KICKASSSTEPMOM to get $20 off your device. Incorporating breath work into your life is such a game changer. It's been a game changer for me. I've got Darren on board, teaching Reese to do the same. Seriously, breath is where it's at. That's www.moonbird.life and use the code KICKASSSTEPMOM to get $20 off your device.
You know, one thing that really comes up for a lot of stepmoms is feeling like an outsider in their home, like an outsider with the kids. Like, you know, there's that first family unit that they come in and, you know, it's dad and the kids or partner and the kids, and then it's just them and they're trying to find their spot in this. And I know so many stepmoms feel this outsider syndrome. And a lot of times it comes back to their past experiences in relationships, maybe, you know, even in high school, not feeling like you belonged or never feeling like you were loved or safe or all of those things. And then you find yourself in these step family situations where you're also feeling like an outsider, and it's just extra triggering, right? You know, for me, just as an example, I really never felt like I belonged in high school or like at parties. I just was like always kind of on the outskirts of the cool girls. Like I was probably in the cool girls, but not really, like just kind of that outsider friend who was like sometimes invited and sometimes not. And then, you know, with my growing up, like I didn't grow up with my siblings. 3 of them live with my mom. I live with my dad. So I always had this outsiderness. So seeing how that showed up for me in being a stepmom, I would feel like an outsider in situations where I really wasn't an outsider, but it was just kind of almost like picking the scab off that unhealed wound, if you will. So, you know, my husband being like, oh, we're going to go downstairs and watch a movie. And I'm thinking to myself, well, am I not invited to watch the movie? Like, why wouldn't you want to watch the movie with me? Oh, is it just because I'm just a stepmom? And then, no, he's just like, you might want a break or you can like do your thing. Like, I'm just going to kind of take the kids and entertain them. And I'm always invited, but realistically, I didn't even want to watch the movie, right? I just kind of wanted to feel like I belonged. But it's those things, right? Like those little situations that I think come up for a lot of stepmoms where there's so much power in diving into that childhood stuff to be like, oh, wait, am I an outsider? Like there's an element of you being an outsider because you're new, but is it that they don't want me here? Or is it that like I have some old stuff coming up as well?
Absolutely. That is such a good point. So going back to the nervous system, this is something that I talk to clients a lot about. When we are in fight or flight, or dorsal vagal, which is our shutdown mode when we just feel complete disconnection. So it basically, if our body is feeling unsafe because of something, and so say you're a stepmom, you're coming into this family and you're trying to be a part of it. And all of that's super dysregulating, right? Like even if you didn't have any past wounds, but that's so hard to do. And you're trying to find your space and your role and what that is and what that looks like. And you're trying to start a new relationship with somebody, like a new marriage, and also have their kids like you. That's so important, right? So all of that's so dysregulating to our bodies. And so when our bodies feel unsafe, our brain comes up with the story as to why we're unsafe. And so oftentimes that story sounds very familiar. And so that's a really good way to recognize, is this the truth? Or do I just feel really unsafe right now and I'm dysregulated? And so my brain is coming up with the story as to why. So for instance, the situation that you named with the movie. So your body's feeling unsafe because they're going to do this without you. And your brain is coming up with this story. And the story is, I don't belong here. They don't want me. They don't even want me to go watch this movie. You mm-hmm. know, instead of thinking, you know, if you were feeling safe and connected, your brain would probably be saying like, I actually don't want to watch a movie. And if I wanted to, I could go down there and enjoy it with them. Mm-hmm. And they love me. And I'm going to take some time for myself during this moment. Right. So that resonates with me a lot because my story, just growing up with a mom who I was like the black sheep in the family, and she was very hypercritical of everything I did. The way that that showed up is with women or just other people in general, I would always kind of be looking for these cues. And my story when I was dysregulated was they don't like me. Mm-hmm. Like they don't like me. I came off too bitchy or I came off too strong or they're intimidated by me or whatever. They don't like me and they're kind of out to get me. And so I really moved around in the worlds in this space of like when I would enter a room, like instead of going up and trying to be friendly and talking to people and being inviting, I was really like walled off and felt like they don't like me. They don't like me for whatever reason. And once I learned about that with the nervous system, it really helped me to understand like so many of our stories that we tell ourselves in order to protect ourselves, right? Are based on wounds from our childhood. And once we're able to recognize that, we can see, okay, this is the story I'm telling myself because I'm dysregulated. And that doesn't mean it's the truth. And so that's what I would say for stepmoms that are coming in with childhood wounds already of not belonging and coming into this new environment, that their story when they're dysregulated, that's going to come up a lot is that they don't belong. And that doesn't always mean that that's the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And realistically, if you're new and you are a little bit of an outsider and you need to focus on building these relationships, if you're listening to these stories, it's often going to make you take a step back and put up these walls, which further perpetuates the story that you're telling yourself, right? I always say to stepmoms, you have to get involved. You have to focus on building those relationships so that you become part of those remember when stories that make you feel so triggered. So you become part of the memories that you guys are making together. And as time goes on, then you're going to be part of the memories and you're not going to feel like an outsider because you're going to have your own kind of family unit. But it's so tricky. Let's talk about the nervous system for a minute. I feel like this is actually something I really wanted to focus on this year for me. It's just always feeling like your nervous system is activated. I truly believe, like, I wake up in the morning and I'm like ready to go. Like, I'm like rearing to go. I try to do the morning routine and I relax and I do all the things, but I still have work to do there. So do you have any strategies for just women in general who feel like they're constantly activated? And we have so many pressures on us right now, like work, family, all the things, like the to-do list of a woman is wild, but how do we just find ourselves? What is that relaxing spot in our nervous system?
Oh, yes. So ventral vagal.
Yeah. How do we get there? Take me there.
Well, so first of all, ventral vagal isn't necessarily always calm. It's just a place of safety and connection. And so where you might find calm more would be like a blended state of ventral vagal, which is our safely connected place, and dorsal vagal, which is our shutdown place if we're not in that safety. But if we are in that safety, then we can be safely still. Mm-hmm. So ventral vagal is really like the place where you feel your most authentic, your most understood, your creativity really goes in that ventral vagal space. And so where you feel like you kind of come alive when you have those moments of like, and you could even be a little bit mobilized. So that could be a combination of ventral vagal or fight or flight. So like, say you do an exercise or play a sport or something where when you are in it, you are just like there, you're present, you feel alive. It's the best you could feel. So ventral vagal isn't necessarily safely calm and still, but I would say that it's different for everybody in terms of like what you want to add in versus like a one size fits all type of thing. So like, for instance, you said you're a more mobilized person. You get up and you feel like you're, do you feel like you're in fight or flight a lot? Or do you just feel like you're energized?
I feel like I wake up at 5 and I'm just like ready to work, ready to get shit done, right? I got stuff to do. I'm ready to dive right into the day. And then I just kind of get, you know, I'm in my most creative space for sure. So I get the best work done at that time, but then I can also get really, you know, activated because you're working and you're thinking about things you need to do and all of that. Like, I feel like that's just like a constant thing. But one thing that, and it's not as bad as it used to be when Darren and I first got together and when I was really struggling with anxiety and really in the midst of the healing work, I just felt like I was always in a rush. You know that feeling? Like you're just never calm. You're never okay. And I was constantly in that fight or flight mode, always. And it was the worst, right? I just felt like I could never get ahead, always in a rush, always had to have my guard up. And it was just exhausting. And I'm not there yet. But again, it's just like trying to find that like calm and peace and just regulation in your life. It's just, I don't know, a battle.
Absolutely. That resonates with me so much. I am like a go, go, go type person as well. And so it sounds like your morning, like some people are more mobilized in the morning. And if your creative piece is coming out inside of you and everything, that's beautiful. But like the always feeling rushed thing, oh, that resonates with me so much. And that is really like, that is dysregulation. And that is you being in a fight or flight. And that is higher levels of cortisol. And that is body tension. So a large part of what can happen when we're kind of in this go, 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 and where our nervous system's always in fight or flight is something called armoring, which happens to a lot of trauma survivors, complex trauma survivors, where it's like our whole body is just so tense. It's like our shoulders are up by our ears and just like we are clenching our jaw, you know? Right. And so something that has been helpful for me with that, like, is recognizing what felt sense. Okay. So that is how our different emotions feel inside our bodies. So if a client was coming to me and saying, I really have a hard time slowing down and resting and feeling calm and relaxed, I would encourage them to get to know what calm and relaxed feels like. When do they feel the most calm and the most relaxed? What activities do they engage in when their body is feeling calm and relaxed? And really encouraging them to slow down the process of the different things that they're doing, recognizing that feeling, that felt sense of rush and sense of urgency is huge in shifting that in our nervous system. Cause we can be like, okay, I need to take some breaths.
I know.
I need to remember that I don't have to rush. Like I would find myself rushing through my bath and my bath would be my downtime, like my time to relax. And I didn't have any reason to rush through that, but I would feel like I need to get in and get out, you know? And so being able to recognize felt sense of calm. So what do you do that helps you feel the most calm and the most slowed down and the most relaxed?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like to read. Reading at night, I love doing that. Just kind of chilling, journaling, being by the water. I feel like whenever I'm by the water, I feel a lot more calm and relaxed. And I like when like the house is clean and, you know, everything is just kind of settled. So I think actually that's one of the reasons why I go, go, go in the morning, because I know I want to get that stuff done. So maybe it's not actually a bad thing, but I do love what you're saying there and saying like recognizing like, what does that feel like? Because I don't think we give enough thought to that. We're just searching for a feeling that maybe we don't even fully understand what that feels like.
Absolutely. And being intentional in recognizing when you feel like that, and then just working towards slowly expanding that. Mm-hmm. So for some people, meditation is not helpful in, you know, slowing them down. Sometimes meditation is really triggering for people, and it feels like adding on more and more and more stuff to help you feel relaxed. That's actually not regulating for our nervous system. Mm-hmm. So I would rather know, what are you starting with? When do you get into that ventral vagal safely connected space where your body feels, maybe your body feels calm, but overall you just feel safely connected to something, so mm-hmm. either yourself, a higher power, or the world, the universe, your family members, whatever it is. I want to know about with people when they feel like that, you know, and then working on expanding those moments. So you like journaling, I would encourage you to journal, you know, your ventral vagal spaces, the times when you feel the most alive and you feel like, man, I just feel so myself, or times with you and Darren where you feel like we just really reached a new level of connection, or like I felt like I shared something with him and he really listened and took it in or whatever. Writing those moments down and keeping track of them is really, really important mm-hmm. to getting in that space more.
So true. It's actually kind of similar to like a gratitude practice too, right? And the power of that and looking for the things that are going well in your life as opposed to looking for the things that are causing you stress. Because as you were saying before, we're looking for confirmation to these stories that we're telling ourselves too. And when you're feeling like, and I'm not good enough, or I'm an outsider, or I don't show up good as a parent, or I'm not reacting well, like you're looking for more moments to confirm those crappy stories you're telling yourself about yourself. And then when you're looking for those positive moments, maybe about your stepkids or your partner, or even just how you're showing up in the day, that can be really powerful too. So that's a huge part of what I do when I'm journaling too. I love just writing out a list. Love me a list.
Yes, absolutely. It is so important because you're right. When we are dysregulated, the story we're telling ourselves is not the truth. And when we're really dysregulated and we get down into that dorsal vagal space, that's when it's like, it's always going to be like this. I'm never going to belong, right? Like, what was I even thinking mm-hmm. joining this family? Nobody's ever going to love me. I'm never going to be their mom, you know? So that's really dorsal vagal feeling for a stepmom would maybe sound like. And so having those moments to turn back to like, wait, remember we had these moments where we were really connecting and I felt like they saw me for who I was and I saw them for who they were. And so like being able to return to those is super important for regulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. One thing that just popped to my head, you know, I find I'm more dysregulated is when I'm multitasking. When I'm trying to do, you know, the mom thing while I'm working, or if I'm trying to, you know, do laundry while I'm cooking, like, you know, you're just trying to do too many things at once. And then, you know, the kids come in and then they want to talk or things going on. Then you almost feel super triggered all the time, right? Because there's just like, you're overstimulated, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. That for me is a big thing. So whenever I was doing school or anything, I really made a big point of when I am at home with my kids, I'm not trying to do different things, which I think is harder. I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like it's been a little bit harder since doing content creation because mm-hmm. I feel like I'll be trying to do that because I don't set aside time for that like I do for my clients and things like that, which I probably need better boundaries around that. But I feel like I'll be trying to multitask like to get that done, that piece of my business done while my kids are around. And if I'm on my phone too much, I feel like it's really dysregulating as a parent. Oh. With my kids. Like, I'm like, why are you bothering me? I'm like, oh, wait, you're my kid. Yeah. Sorry about that. I should focus on you right now, you know?
Yeah. I noticed that too. When my screen time and my anxiety and my nervous system, like all the things, it is so related. You know, this past weekend, I just deleted everything off my phone for 3 days. And, you know, taking those breaks, I think is really, really powerful too, right?
Absolutely. That is so important. And that's what I was going to say too about the always being in a rush thing is that that is really what our society today has created for us, right? That we always have to be doing a billion things at once. And when we come from trauma, mm-hmm. we are naturally pulled that way anyways. Being safely still feels really uncomfortable when you have a lot of trauma and wounds in your background. And so we're naturally pulled towards going in a million different directions and like staying super, super busy. And that's one way we help ourselves not feel things, you know? So I think that having the phones and being able to check our email and social media and all of these different things, like it really encourages this dysregulation and this sense of urgency in our lives and takes away from so much of the enjoyment of just like being present.
Mm-hmm. The power of white space in your calendar has been something I've been really working on, and just having like a couple hours a day where there's nothing, right? Like I'm doing nothing and it's scheduled nothing. It's scheduled white space, right? Like that's a protected space. It's not there to be filled. It is there to just be and just do whatever feels right in that moment. That to me has been such a game changer and just giving myself time to just like fully breathe. I had a breathwork expert, Ashley Neese, on the podcast, and she was just talking about, you know, breathwork and just the, just giving ourselves permission to rest even.
Absolutely.
Just resting. Like, what does that even look like? And that's not watching a Netflix show. It's like literally resting your body and your nervous system and like not being stimulated, all the things. It's being in nature, that kind of stuff. It's game changing.
Absolutely. Being in nature is a huge one for me, for my ventral vagal space. And that's always something, even for my kids too, I notice if we're not outside, they get very dysregulated and I get very dysregulated. So we live in Indiana and we live near a lot of trails and stuff like that. And something that I used to do a lot more, but now with three of them, it can be a little overwhelming, is just like go on hikes and stuff like that first thing in the morning. And that would just be so regulating for me. And I feel the exact same way. That's one of the biggest things that I have done. What you said about just having those 2 hours during the day, like my toddler still naps 2 to 3 hours in the afternoon. And once I started learning about my nervous system and my tendency to go, 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 I used to always be like, while they were napping, I was cleaning the house or I was doing homework or something like that, or doing work. And I realized like that time, I really need my break. I really need to just like not do anything and not be productive, and that's okay.
No, for sure. And I think there's just so much power as we're wrapping up is understanding your nervous system, like understanding when you're dysregulated and being able to like identify that and just know what's going on in your body and just like, I need a beat right now, or I need to just take some deep breaths, or I need to take that space, you know, walk away. What did you say? I need to either disengage or rage or something.
I'm either going to, rage or disengage. Those are like the two, you know, choices that you have sometimes.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah. So just being able to recognize like what is going on for us and why it's going on, it's literally life-changing. And that's why I'm just so grateful I stumbled upon your Instagram and just the content that you're sharing, because this is important stuff. And I think this is when we're breaking those generational like cycles, right? By like acknowledging what's happened in our past and how it's impacting right now, as opposed to just kind of repeating those patterns and those rage cycles and like all the things. And then we passed on to our kids and then like leaving them to do the work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And healing our nervous system and regulating our nervous system. That was one of the biggest things that I learned when I read Deb Dana's book, Polyvagal. I think it was Polyvagal in Therapy or something. It was about polyvagal theory. And it was talking about how nervous system dysregulation is passed down from generation to generation. And that changing that is really monumental to breaking those cycles. And so I really try to remember that for myself, like that resting is really revolutionary in being a good mom to my children. And if my mother and my grandmother had taken the time to rest and loved themselves and given themselves compassion and slowed down and been like, you know what, I'm going to take care of myself and I'm going to soothe myself, my childhood would have been completely different. Mm-hmm. And I think so many people could say that, you know, if their primary caregivers would have taken the time to take care of themselves and heal and soothe and figure out how their body felt and what they needed, man, it would have been so different.
Mm-hmm. No, but then we probably wouldn't be here talking.
That's true.
We would have a different career.
That is a very good point. That is so true. So yes. And one more thing, just because we're on this, when it comes to soothing our nervous system, a lot of times it's talking to younger parts of ourselves that are actually the parts that are being triggered. So I don't know if you've ever heard of internal family systems, but like the idea that there's these different parts of us, right? And inner child work. And so when our nervous system is super triggered and we get into that dorsal vagal shutdown place of just like, oh, I'm never going to belong, or I'm never going to be a good mom, or I'm going to fail every time, you know, it's usually a younger part of us. And we really need to like step away and just like really talk to that part. Like, it's okay. Like, you're safe. We're all okay. And we're going to be okay. And really being able to soothe those younger parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love, you know, Bethany Webster, Healing the Inner Mother.
She
does a lot of work on the mother wound. I think she was kind of like the beginning of the mother wound. Her work is just so, it has been so life-changing for me. But yeah, going back, doing that inner child work. And I know some people think it's a little corny. They're like, what do you mean you're talking to that aspect of your child? But you really think about it, like those moments in your life where you felt like your needs weren't met, or you feel like you were alone or scared or unsure. Those moments are showing up in your adult life in some way, shape, or form. And so going back and doing that healing, and it's almost like imaginary, right? Like your, what is it? Vision work or your
visualization. Yeah.
Visualization. Yeah. There's the word. Yeah. The visualization I think is so powerful. So anyway, Amber, you are amazing. We'll have to get you on again. I could talk to you forever. I think we got to be best friends now, actually.
I know. I'm so down. I love your stuff so much. And it has been so fun talking with you. So thank you so much for reaching out to me.
Amazing. And so we'll link all of your Instagram and your website and all the stuff you got going on for everyone if they want to come check you out. But again, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's it for this one. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone who you think it would resonate with. And if you haven't already, if you could take a couple minutes, head to iTunes and give this podcast a rating and a review. It would mean the world to me. But only if you like the episode, though. If you don't, that's cool. Just remember what they say. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Now, if you are a stepmom craving more, I highly recommend joining my membership, the exclusive stepmom community. Members get access to additional podcast episodes, interviews and coaching sessions and live Q&As and just exclusive next level content and conversation that I don't share anywhere else. Have an issue or a stressor that you'd like my support with? Just bring it to the Ask Jamie section of the forum. I check in throughout the week and I'm here to help you out. To get more information or to join, head to www.jamiescrimger.com/membership and I'll see you in there.